Hello, and welcome to the Green Profit Academy Pros Podcast. This show digs into the challenges in growing a lawn care and landscape business while maximizing your profit. I'm Christine Era.
And I'm Steve Bousquet. We are the green industry experts in profit, growth, and leadership.
Today's episode, we're going to dive deep into a story of success, challenge, and innovation in the world of small business. Today, I'm thrilled to have with us a remarkable guest who I've gotten to know personally and professionally over the last 4 years. He has grown his business by over 800%, again, in the last 4 years. And I want to welcome David Potts to our show. So he is the owner of USA Insulation in Ohio. So David, thank you for taking the time to join us and talk with us today.
Of course, Christine.
So I just want to start off, I want the audience to get to know you a little bit and your history. So why don't we just start with you telling us a bit about yourself and your business?
Yeah, so I joined USA Insulation in 2017. I left a window and siding company as a sales rep, moved over here in 2017 as a sales rep for the corporate location that was here. After about 6 months, I got the opportunity to purchase the location. I purchased it. And then in 2019, we expanded to another territory. And then in 21, we expanded again. And then been owner operator since then, running and grinding.
Yeah, you've had, I know since the time that I met you in 2020, you've been very focused on your business, your growth, your goals. And I know, you know, where you are now, where your business was 4 years ago. So could you share with our audience, like, what was your business like 4 years ago?
Yeah. 2019, 2020, we had just expanded into a second territory, owner operator, kind of wearing every hat possible. I had had some failed bookkeepers, failed accounting. I'm not a great process person. I'm a sales rep by trade. So I can make money. I can also spend money. You know, maybe discipline wasn't necessarily there. More of a bulldog approach of just, you know, running through walls and we'll get it done somehow, some way. And that's how we grew. But we were definitely hitting our head against the wall as we were growing, trying to scale. I wasn't able to just scale just by doing more, you know, working 80 hours a week. I couldn't magically start working 100 or 120 and somehow finding a way to get what I wanted to get done on a daily basis.
And what was your role in the company at that time?
My role that time, we had just hired, you know, basically a general manager, office manager that I had known for many years, brought in a lot of discipline. She was now taking over and trying to clean up maybe more of the internal operations and business side. So my role was still, though, very much running the sales team, running the marketing, and overall the actual install operations, trying to get the trucks on the road, fixing trucks, still doing a lot of installs. Still wearing almost every hat in the business.
And how big was your crew? Like, how many employees did you have?
2019, we were maybe 12 to 15 total, including the sales reps. That was probably right at the 2019, 2020.
Okay. So you had your field crew who goes out. You have about, what is it, three per vehicle who goes out and does the
three per vehicle. Mm-hmm. We had two sales reps, and then me and Jen.
Jen is so her role was office/operations manager, and also keeping you as the owner in your lane, as I recall.
Oh, absolutely.
Much as possible.
And HR, because God knows before there, I was just trying to keep the lights on.
Yeah, she did HR. So she did pretty much everything that you didn't do in the business to keep the, you know, everything moving forward. So yeah.
keep it moving forward, keep it legal.
And what was your, if you don't mind sharing, your revenue level around that time?
Yeah, 2019, we had just hit $1 million. 2020, we had done a little over $3 million at the end of 2020.
At the end of 2020. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we met at the beginning of 2020, which was a very challenging time because it was right, you know, it was when COVID hit.
Yeah.
Businesses were shutting down. There was a lot of uncertainty. And, you know, businesses were also really struggling because they couldn't go out and produce revenue because of all the regulations that were being enforced with COVID in the service industry.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I know it was very challenging and uncertain. So at this point, David, where is the business now?
We have 54 full-time employees, a couple part-time employees. We have 3 locations. We own 2 buildings. We're last year we did a little over $10 million. This year we're planning to go a little over $12 million.
So in the last 4 years, from the end of 2019, beginning of 2020, you guys have grown 800% in revenue growth.
Yep.
So what do you think were the key factors that contributed to this staggering amount of growth?
You know, there are a lot of luck. I joke when I say luck, but there's definitely some luck involved. A lot of processes, because it wasn't scalable at that $1 million pace by any means. Mm-hmm. And then obviously a lot of good people putting in the right place to do the right thing. Realizing that there are people that are better and smarter and know what they're doing in individual things more so than me, and I could let go and let them do their thing.
And was there anything that provided you, you know, kind of like a game changer for you during that time that provided you the clarity that you needed to allow those things to happen in your business?
Well, so we met. 2019 was definitely my reckoning of profit first. You know, yeah, great. We made $1 million, or we had $1 million in revenue. That does not mean we profited what we should have. And I surely didn't pay myself what we should have. So that's really where that started in 2019, 2020, and the growth and the change. And quite frankly, the profit account and the growth account and really cleaning up and dialing that in, which was fun to do during COVID, because that was a whole nother layer to that whole fun thing. But that really, those guidelines helped stem the processes and the growth to the point of where we were able to buy the buildings, where we were able to buy the trucks to grow. We had the kind of the runway in place to allow us to continue to push the way we wanted to, but also have the, again, the processes or the restraints to control that crazy growth.
Yeah. And working with you and, you know, your manager, you guys gave me, you know, quite a few insights that contributed, you know, to the book, though, you know, you guys aren't in the industry, in the lawn and landscape industry, you mm-hmm. still are in a service-based industry that has a very similar structure mm-hmm. of operations, crew size, costs, you know, just the overall business model. And some of the things that we had talked about in implementing processes when it came to profit first, supporting you as a business owner and your vision with growth, you know, helping your team out was one, the growth account and setting up a growth account. So that mm-hmm. way it was giving you permission to know what should I spend? What can I spend? What can we afford to spend? And, you know, kind of put you as the bull in your own china shop and your office manager not having to manage you.
Yeah.
And then 100%. We also looked at the flex season account because, you know, she had identified that there was a kind of a slow season in your business, and that slow season was impacting the rest of the year, and giving that insight. So we were able to come up with some strategies on identifying how can the rest of the year support, you know, that 60-day period, you know, without bringing you guys down or considering a cash crunch. So it was very insightful, you know, going through the processes to support your growth, the profit first system, and the amount that you guys put in the work, mm-hmm. you know, as a team, and being aware of your strengths, your weaknesses. And as a leader, one of the things that I realized was you were aware of how you operated and what things, you know, asking for help, like what can we implement to kind of keep myself in my own lane, to where I'm not, you know, bulldozing my team.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other interesting thing that, at least for me, that I found that I wasn't alone. You know, I always thought, you know, I don't have a business training, and maybe just my business was just different because of the way I was running it. But, you know, through conversations, obviously, we've found that we are very similar to the lawn and landscape. I've talked to, you know, some other home services companies that operate very similar. So it is the same. It doesn't really matter what we were installing or doing. The way we were run was so similar that it's like, huh, I've been through that problem, or maybe that's a problem I should be looking at that might be coming. So it was just definitely insightful to see I'm not alone.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've met some of our other clients that we've worked with over the years, and being able to have, you know, conversations about mm-hmm. like the business model and what their challenges are around hiring and, yep. you know, technicians or operations teams, you know, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to talk about like some of the challenges that you've experienced, just to give our listeners insight. Like everybody wants to grow, right? They're always mm-hmm. like, I want to grow my business. They're all in on growing. They have these ideas and expectations around, you know, growth, what it looks like. So could you share with us during this period of rapid expansion, what were some of the biggest hurdles that you faced and how did you overcome them?
Capitalization, number one, which the growth account obviously helped with, but it also controlled, you know, I would love to go out there and buy a bunch of trucks or just overexpand myself or bringing in more materials so I was ready to go. That account allowed me to do that, but not get carried away, because I'm an instant gratification. I want it all right now and I want to do it right now. And it just wasn't possible, especially from like a marketing side. So that was definitely an issue. And personnel is always going to be an issue with growth. You know, you go from thinking of, well, I just have one crew and now all of a sudden I have two crews. Well, how do I split that number one crew? And they're still supposed to perform the same, but they don't. And you're putting somebody new on, or how do I find somebody new? You know, and then going to multiple locations is the same thing. So maybe I fixed one, but now I got to reproduce that into a second one or a third one. I just want to clone, you know, all my good people. And you're like, how do I do that? So really working, you know, we worked through pumpkin plan, obviously, and really designing a long-term goal of mine was creating an LMS and creating a 1,000-day training onboarding program for my installers and my sales reps to really get it to where they are all trained very similarly. The trucks are all set up exactly the same. The offices are set up the same. So that regardless of what location you were in or what training you got, everybody was on the same platform to continue to raise people up to maybe not be clones, but darn close as best we could to allow us to continue to scale, which has been huge in our growth.
And I'm curious, because I hear, you know, you're looking at like one location and then duplicating this. And then also finding a way to support that, you know, like the same narrative, you know, yeah. throughout your company, as to where everybody's speaking the same language, they do everything the same. And having three locations Did you find that there were challenges in implementing these processes with these with these three locations, and what was there any difference?
Yeah. Oh God. Yes. You know, you have to realize how processes or culture, whatever you want to call it, is created. And I guess blindly, originally I thought, well, I have two locations, it's all run by me, so I'll just have the same culture. And the reality is that doesn't happen. The culture is made by the people in the building every day, or the people that are enforcing it. It's not just because I'm around or I own it that it's going to be magically what it's supposed to be. So finding the right people in the buildings each day that are, drinking the same Kool-Aid and believing the same things that I did, getting through our core values and our laws together, and really all being in the same boat, rowing the same direction, that is really where we saw the culture, the processes, and the real growth kind of accelerate. Mm-hmm. We were doing things beforehand, but we were always just shocked. Like, I don't understand why they can't follow this process, or why they don't feel included, or why are we having so much turnover? And until we peeled back and realized, you know, it was our doing. It was basically the management not being able to get the culture, or being able to get the processes really down into the locations as well as it needed to, and really getting the people there to believe they were part of a team.
And so I'm hearing that it's the, you know, making sure like you have everybody on the same page. Mm-hmm. And I always ask, you know, is it the person or the process? And, you know, when owners have challenges, and because it's very easy, you know, to come out of the gate and go, you know, oh, this person's doing this wrong, and kind of, you know, go down that negative path and point fingers and blame. So I always like to take a pause and go, is it the person or the process? And you're struggling with this, you know, culture alignment in all three of these locations. What were you finding it to be that, you know, wasn't the alignment originally? Was it the people that you were hiring in the business, or that you were kind of turning things over to, or was it that the process, like, it wasn't understood? Was it the processes that were contributing to the confusion?
Yeah, I think I always include one more thing in there, which you've known me long enough to know that I'm going to do this, is processes are always the number one issue of why something didn't work. The number two issue I always find is I'll blame myself, only because I'm sure I did not communicate it effectively or enough, or the way it was supposed to be. Like, I didn't make sure that it landed. I might have just said something. I might have, I threw out an email or a PDF, or I taped it to the wall. Why didn't they read it and understand it? And I never explained it. And then I find the third person is, yeah, I mean, there are sometimes some people are not fits. But usually when we look all the way back and say maybe the person wasn't a fit, there were red flags at the interview. There were red flags a long time ago that we never paid attention to. Again, all the way back to a process issue. It is almost always a process issue or a process explanation that fails.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting that, you know, you throw that third one in there, because typically when I ask, is it the person or the process, and we go through that conversation, the aha is the owner or the leader or the manager saying, well, I probably, you know, should communicate this more clearly. Or yeah. Did I communicate it? Do they really understand? Mm-hmm. Well, I told them once. Yeah, I should assume that they should remember. So, yeah. So I think it's that's kind of the outcome, you know, with the person or the process question. Is as the leader, you know, we have to be responsible for what we're communicating to our team and making sure that those expectations are really defined and understood, you know, and do they have the tools to meet those expectations? Do they have the support?
And it's always eye-opening when somebody else explains something that you supposedly explained. And then all of a sudden it's an aha moment for that person. And you're like, but I've explained it seven times to that person already. And the reality is they didn't hear you. Like, you didn't explain it in a way that they understood. And that's it's hard to accept sometimes that you are the cause.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, especially as entrepreneurs, we like to go, you know, over 100 miles an hour. And it's slowing down is not one of the things that we enjoy doing.
No.
So can you share one challenge that really tested just like your strengths, your, you know, resilience, and how you navigated through it during this last 4-year period?
I mean, you mean COVID wasn't enough?
Right.
I mean, we survived COVID, laying everybody off, being shut off, completely closed, not knowing when or if you could come back, and being a home service business, insulation business, I have to be able to go into your house to perform work. Like, mm-hmm. The lawn and landscape, I assume, yes, there's still some interaction, but at the same point, I don't need to come into your house. Well, I have no option. I have to be in your house. So that was absolutely a crazy time. No one knew, kind of what that answer was going to be. We were creative and lucky enough. We worked with, our homeowners that were still calling and wanting us, as well as kind of local regulations, on how we could still be safe for everybody. And yet still get work done and get cash flow going, to the point of, we have 3 guys in a truck or 3 installers in a truck. We started shifting around and sending multiple trucks to an install so that they didn't have to ride side by side with each other, and testing and bleaching trucks and cleaning and staggering the crews and, doing home inspections with homeowners virtually. That was a crazy thing to tell, and maybe an older couple or maybe not a technological savvy couple that, hey, I need you to take your iPad and turn on the camera and we're going to do a Zoom meeting and I need you to go up in your attic and show me what you have so I can tell you what kind of insulation we can do. And but we did it and widely successful, until things went back to, I guess, this new normal. But that's what we had to do to survive. But that was a horrible time. I don't want to go back ever.
Yeah. I know that, COVID was one of those things that happened that I don't think anybody ever expected, like something like that to happen. And the amount of growth that it forced us into, or having to pivot that it and be resourceful that it forced us into so quickly, yeah. It was, we had to adapt very fast to so many unknowns. And I think that really changed kind of, our curve on how we approach things in business, our resiliency, other things that we wouldn't be where we are now, if it wasn't for that unexpected challenge and how we had no choice to kind of work through it. And I see this in a lot of businesses to where many businesses, kind of they're in a whole different place now, far beyond where they would have expected to be because of how they navigated through that very challenging time with COVID in their business.
Yeah. I mean, it forced us to be creative. Granted, there's a lot of people that probably weren't creative and, didn't have the same results, but the ones that were creative and pushed, there were ways around, and it has changed the business for the future, for sure.
And then I'm curious, outside of COVID, mm-hmm. is there something like as a leader and as a business owner that has really challenged you and has changed the way that you, the way you show up, the way you see things? And then I'm curious too, like how you what is that and how did you navigate through that?
Yeah. I mean, as we've grown and implemented, maybe more management staff, that middle layer management now, I'm not able to direct manage every person that we have, down to every person in a truck going out to the house. We're just not, it's not scalable anymore. So as we've implemented that middle layer, there's definitely been challenges because, you know, you want them to do exactly what you would do and they don't know what that is. And, you know, some of them have never been leaders or managers before. You know, it's not something that's necessarily taught in school if they haven't had the life lessons. So there's been a lot of beating your head against the table of, I don't understand why, you know, they can't do what they need to do. Again, back to, I've told them so many times or I've shown them, but it's just not working. And so, you know, getting through it, you know, one eye-opening, Clifton Strengths. So now every employee of mine that comes through does Clifton Strengths. So we can at least kind of understand them, but also they can understand us and then how we can kind of work together to show up for each other and work through that. And then my middle management really diving in to try and understand management leadership and how, you know, building those, I guess we'll call them soft skills of how to manage people, and how to change. You know, not everybody has to be like me, but I need to understand how they are and they need to understand how I am so we can work together to still accomplish the goal that needs to happen. So that's probably been maybe the most challenging out of scaling is learning other personalities and how to still be successful, really regardless of whatever that other personality is in comparison to mine.
Yeah. So you're implementing a strengths-based leadership in your business, mm-hmm. which is something that, you know, we've introduced to all of our clients, whether they're over at Core Growth Strategies or at Green Profit Academy, where, you know, because Steve is a certified strengths yes. coach. And this strengths-based leadership, it's where you identify, you know, what is utilizing Clifton Strengths, what are your strengths as an individual, and what are you really great at? And, you know, we don't necessarily like to call them, you know, weaknesses, but it's like, what should you not be doing because it's not what you're great at?
Yeah.
And digging into that, how receptive was your team with this idea to when you discovered the strengths-based and brought it back to them? What were their initial thoughts?
My team's, I think, immune at this point to my crazy ideas. I just think they kind of go with things at first. But then after they did the test and then we kind of went through top five and lesser top five, mm-hmm. alcohol. And they started almost laughing of like, oh, that is me. Oh, that is accurate. Oh, wow. I didn't think it would be accurate or I didn't think it, you know, could do that by answering some questions. And then really diving more deeper into, you know, what does that mean when you're that and I'm this? And really having those conversations, it gained traction. And so that was cool. But it also wasn't a 10-minute conversation. Let's look at your test and like, all right, now just do things. Like it's a continuous conversation, a continuous reminder, a continuous farming of those strengths as a reminder and as a reminder of, you know, what are my bottom five and don't let me live there. And surely don't give me something that I have to do that is in there because it's not going to go well. So sometimes we find, yes, technically that's a task that belongs to you because it's your department or whatever, but we need to find a way to get it away from you because you're not going to be successful at that task. So it's more, the group really working together for the betterment of the individual.
And it sounds like, and I know this from experience with my team is the team is aware of each other's strengths, like where what they're really good at versus what they're not. It's just not you as the manager or the leader who's aware. It's everybody is aware of their team member strengths.
And for some things, it also exposed a strength that maybe you didn't know or didn't see But then as you started to, you know, maybe peel the layers of the onion back, you realized, oh yeah, that's always been there. I just didn't realize how it showed up.
Core Growth Strategies provides business growth management solutions through cloud accounting, bookkeeping, and strategic business consulting programs. Our team works with small businesses in lawn care and landscape and trade industries throughout the U.S. We increase our clients' business acumen by creating business performance transparency through financials and strategic advisement based on industry best practices and benchmarks. Our experienced team provides support, guidance, and coaching, thereby allowing our clients to connect with viable data and discover their own solutions. Core Growth Strategies programs and services are designed to get your business from where it is now to where you have always dreamed it to be. Visit us today at coregrowthstrategies.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Don't miss our exclusive limited time podcast special. Just mention promo code GPA Pro to any member of our team during your complimentary consultation, or enter the promo code on our site when you sign up for one of our online programs. That's promo code GPA Pro.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really hard. And I say this a lot, you know, in our coaching programs, it's really hard to acknowledge what's great about ourselves and have some admiration about that. And it's typically the people around us who recognize what's great about us and how we show up that way. So it's very insightful when we start digging into our strengths and having our team dig into them as well to get that, you know, acknowledgement and raise the awareness about what we're really great at, which we do naturally, you know, we think, oh, it's not a big deal, but then seeing how much, you know, it value it brings to the company and how much your team members value it.
Yeah. No one's ever shocked by the bottom five.
That doesn't surprise. Yeah. Surprise them. That's funny. Yeah. So what did this change? I'm curious, what did you notice? Because this is, I think, within the last year that you implemented the strengths-based leadership and you went at it, you know, pretty diligently where you're like, okay, everybody's going to do their assessment. We're going to start unpacking this and having conversations. And I know you made changes in your company once you discovered people's strengths. What were those changes and why did you make them?
Yeah, I mean, we were operating on a branch manager, individual kind of a silo location by location, organization, and then some overall arching management that kind of did the financials or HR or whatever for everyone. What we found after going through and then allowing the team to kind of work together and talk together, you know, quite frankly, 2023, we blew up that entire management team structure to the point of now it's more of a corporate structure of, you know, those people are in the roles that fit them best via their strengths, where they can excel, but they're doing it for all the locations instead of just this one location. You know, we were asking people to be really good at marketing and sales and install. You know, I'm like, well, you're not an owner. So why? I was so blind to think that they were going to be as, you know, able to do every avenue for this one location. And so now we've got it to where people have been able to sit into some roles and I assume shortly I'll be replaced by one of them as she's exceeding far superior to what I'm doing at this point. But they're really growing at their capabilities that, quite frankly, I don't even think they knew what those capabilities were until we got them aligned to where they needed to be.
Yeah. And that is amazing, you know, because we've had so many conversations over the years and not just like with entrepreneurs we work with, but when I go to my own groups, like professional groups and other entrepreneurs are there, and we talk about investing in our team. And we talk about growing and developing our team. And there's, you know, kind of that thing of like, well, what if I invest in them and they leave?
Yeah. You know, what if you don't invest and they stay?
Right. And that's what I hear you saying is you're looking at your team, you're investing in them and developing them and bringing them up. It's very obvious in the company, like the impact that it's having. You know, I see it because I know your numbers and we have all these conversations. Could you share with our audience what impact that has had with you being aware of developing your team and investing in them? And
yeah, you know, I mean,
what happened when they stayed?
Yeah. Or left. You know, so a great story of mine is, you know, again, there's three installers per truck, and I hired an installer that was, you know, a number three on a truck. And long story short, through hard work, through some training, you know, she wanted to be an owner. And okay, yeah, you want to be an owner. You're 20 something years old. You know, what do you think you know? And I'm like, well, okay, let's see. I don't know, but let's see. And, you know, over a couple of years of working together and teaching and learning and willingness to grow and whatnot, she's a very successful owner in USA at this point, with some great growth. So yeah, I invested her, and yeah, I lost her. Okay. You know, she helped me build some processes along the way. You know, she helped me find some things out along the way that, were some shortcomings or some opportunities for growth, or, you know, perfecting some things, you know, and the ones that are here. Yeah. I don't hire from the outside. I probably will at some point. It's been one of those stakes in the ground that I've just put in that, everybody for me has always been ground up, because I think you appreciate the path. Don't get me wrong. There's some days that I just am like, man, this would be a lot easier, but it's so important to me on the culture side. You know, my team's been with me in the great times. My team's been through some hellacious times. And at the end of the day, I know my team's got my back and I've got theirs, and they know that. So it allows, you know, we're a big family, and truly a family. They know there's anything I'll do for them. And I'm quite sure if I needed something, they'd be there, and they show up every day for me, and they continue to grow. So, you know, who knows? If they leave me, they leave me. I know if they leave me, they will be wildly successful. And I'm okay with that. If that's what their dream is, then go for it. But to see somebody come into the business and then say, you know what, I just don't think they're worth it, I'm not going to invest in them. And they may be okay with that. But, you know, the third installer on the truck could be the next owner, could be the next, you know, upper management if given the opportunity, or they could be the third installer on the truck forever.
Right.
I don't know. I've never believed that.
But what I hear is you're communicating in your culture that no matter what level you come in, you know, the opportunity is endless.
100%.
And that's very rare in a service-based business company, to where they could come in, like you said, as an installer. And, you know, one day they could be a manager, or they could be an owner or something like that. And I think that's what really contributes, you know, to the dedication and loyalty in your company is the opportunity and the support that they see for growth. And it's real. It's not just a BS story that, you know, I mean, it's like, oh, 100%. Come work here.
Again, it's the same as how I got here. I was a sales rep. I didn't open this as the owner from day one. Like, I worked to get to the top. It's more about work ethic and getting things done and doing the right thing than it is maybe about title.
Yeah. So I want to kind of shift gears here and talk about, you know, some positives, like what were some unexpected benefits or outcomes of growing the business at this rate and at this level that you hadn't, you know, maybe recognized during your journey?
Sure. Well, one, no one said it could be done. You know, $1 million when we started talking in 2019, that was a really big location, So that kind of blew people's eyes wide open when we started crossing the 3 million and the 5 million and the 8 million to what the possibility is. You know, as far as kind of what it's allowed, you know, this growth, you know, I own two buildings, two very large commercial buildings. That's insane. You know, never did I think, you know, I was just happy to pay rent those first couple of months, quite frankly. Now all of a sudden I'm a landlord. So the monetary, you know, comfort of where we've gotten to, you know, obviously for my future, but then my family's future is crazy. The ability to, you know, build this team, this kind of machine that's running, you know, I took 3 weeks off pretty recently. I was just gone from the business, came back. I was almost a little sad that people did not miss me and they were almost upset I was back. I'm like, wow, okay. So the good news was, is they had everything under control. The bad news was, is, you know, I needed to get in things to mess things up because I was bored. But, you know, that's just the normal, you know, so as we grow and get this situated, I get the opportunity now to be creative, which is what I like, and start looking at, you know, what's next? You know, do I want to buy another building? Do I want to expand into something else? You know, what do I want to do that's exciting for me? Not maybe getting on the back of a truck or climbing up into an attic like I had to, you know, a number of years ago to just to keep the lights on.
Yeah. And I know when we first started working together, one of the things I always address is owner's compensation. And you laugh, you know what's coming here. So owner's compensation. So one of the things in Profit First, in implementing Profit First, is we always find that the owner is sacrificing their own, you know, financial security. They're not paying themselves enough. You know, they're, you know, not taking certain benefits or even, you know, bonuses from the company, and they're just reinvesting it back in the company. And I know you have come a long way. I think you were the one out of all of the people I've worked with who I had to drag kicking and screaming along, you know, the path of you need to pay yourself well, you need to pay yourself better, you need to, you know, take bonuses, all these things. And I know you're at a completely different, you know, financial security than you were 4 years ago, and you embraced that. Could you talk a little bit about that? Because I know there's other people out there that they're where you were with that mindset 4 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I paid myself. If there's something after last, that's where I was. I paid myself enough to pay the bills that I had to pay at home, and that bare minimum. Like, I wasn't putting any savings. I wasn't doing anything extra. You know, a ramen noodle dinner. Like, that's what we were rocking. You know, to take care of the business and take care of my people, and, you know, to make sure that we had the right equipment and just, you know, survive and grow. I cared more that my people were taken care of than myself, which I still do. But doing Profit First, and then obviously you beating me over the head numerous times, we have gotten ourselves to where I can do both. You know, Profit First and the owner's comp and it being situated and obviously setting up the business a little differently allowed us to take care of myself, take care of the benefits, you know, do the things that I wanted to do in the role I was in with the growth I was in, but also make sure that I wasn't doing that and sacrificing the health of the company or the growth of the company, that everybody was still okay. And we were still paying everybody very fairly and taking care of things. 'Cause you always felt so guilty doing it. So, you know, really those kind of processes, and you dragging me along, kind of got us to where we're at.
And I'm curious, what was it that shifted that mindset for you? What allowed you to, I guess, give yourself permission to pay yourself more, to feel comfortable with it?
You know, really, well, one, being forced to always helps. And then I handed all the financial controls away from myself. So I was no more payroll, no more anything on the bank side. It all had to be approved by Jen internally and obviously you on the external. So that requirement, but also that trust of, you know, the two of you had it. You weren't going to let me fail, which was always the fear. If it was in my hands, I was going to fail. I was going to make the wrong decision. So I just didn't make a decision. Therefore, I was safe. You know, and then obviously the Profit First system allowed me to see those bank accounts and the calculator allowed me to work through that. So that once I knew, you know, my break-even number that I needed to install every week, and then where I wanted to be growth-wise for every week install, that made my life easier. I could work with the sales guys and the install team just on that number, knowing that the calculator was going to take care of everything else. So it allowed me to simplify my thinking, you know, and just the dividing of all the bank accounts from one account into, you know, the chaos that some days I feel like we've created. But I love that we created it. But some days I'm like, man, I don't know, I overdid it. Allows the fluidity of knowing it's okay.
So the security of the system, mm-hmm. the trust, the people on your team,
yep.
allowed you to create that space and know, like, hey, it's going to be okay.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think that that's probably the biggest thing is the fear, the uncertainty. Like, oh, if I do pay myself more, like, is the business going to be okay? You know, am I creating a problem here? And I think that that's typically the issue is, you know, if I take money from the business, is the business still going to survive?
Yeah.
And are my people?
And I think we exposed that if the money sat in the bank account, we were going to spend it one way or the other. We were going to find something to spend it on, whether we needed it or not. So, you know, once we started dividing it out, that kind of exposed that and made it okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It is something that I am very proud of you and your team, that your team supported you to get through, helped push through. And I love to see the quality of life that you now have, like taking the time off, being able to go on vacations, you know, being able to take your wife, who's one of your biggest fans, on vacation, you know, and supporters, you know, and taking that personal time. So I think it's an amazing thing to see you enjoy that side of it now.
Yeah. It wasn't like that a couple of years ago.
Yeah. So could you share a particular moment or achievement during this four-year journey that you're most proud of?
Oh, yeah, I mean, we've won quite a few awards individually or as a team, but, you know, probably some of the bigger ones, we've won Better Business Bureau Torch Award twice for ethics, which is hard to do in an insulation, you know, that's in your walls or in your attic. It's unseen. So that's hard for people on an ethics side to really believe, you know. So that was pretty cool to be able to win out. And we beat some pretty big companies to do that twice now. So that was exciting. I've been International Franchisee of the Year for the IFA. I've won some 20 under 40 awards. You know, I mean, we've done some pretty cool things as a team for sure.
Yeah, and that's a big accomplishment. I know that the Franchise of the Year is one that you received recently. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of like, yeah, you know, yeah, we did this. And I was like, why didn't you tell us this? You know, what was going on? And that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
So I know that you do some other things in your community. Can you talk mm-hmm. a little bit about like how you... this journey has been able to help you support your community and how it impacts you and your team?
Yeah. I mean, so we set aside a percentage of our revenue for charity. We've done that now for many years. The cool thing is that is now growing to the point of we almost have to ask questions of how to spend the money. Not that there's not an abundance of charities, but we want to make sure it's the right charities that fit, you know, our core values. So that's been exciting. It's almost becoming a full-time job. I love that. And then we developed a hometown hero program where we insulate veterans' houses for free. Number of years ago, we were able to do one a year. Last year we were able to do three. So we continue to expand. Through our growth, we're able to give back more, which is crazy exciting. I mean, that's what we're here for.
Yeah, it's amazing to where you've grown your business, to where you're now giving back to the community and just changing people's lives and then having your team a part of that too. So, I mean, it's just this mindset shift of we can contribute to this with our team and with the company that we work at.
Yeah, it's not we can. I mean, we have to. That is our job.
So I want to know, like, where do you go from here? What do you see? What do you see in your future? What's happening?
I don't know. Vacation. Who knows, right? Like, it was an interesting year this year with the management reshift. I've always, since we started, the goals were always mine, and the planning was always mine, and where we were going, and I was leading the ship. I turned the reins over this year to my team. Because who knows what I'm doing or where I'm going. And I didn't want it always to be, David said, or this is whatever. And my team came up with a crazy idea that they want to be a $34 million revenue business in the next 10 years. And, I'm like, well, we're at 10. So how do we do this? And they came up with some ideas. Some I'm still not on board of how do we get there, and some that I'm like, oh yeah, we can do that. And so it's pretty cool to know, they want to grow, they want to continue developing things. They want to get to a point to where we can do 100 hometown heroes, and that's 100 veterans that we're giving, in a year. So they're embracing that that culture, that growth, that world. So it's like proud dad moment. I get to like watch my kids like take over and run. I don't know where that leaves me. Hopefully proud dad watching and still here, but same point I've already said. I've probably already got somebody targeting my seat, and I'm okay with that. So I don't know where I end up or what I do or where that goes to, but at the same point, I know we're going forward. So we'll figure that out as we go.
And I'm curious, what is the one thing as a leader that you think you could do to support your team in this journey, this next stage?
Support, continue to let them grow, help them grow. Again, at this point in my life, it's more, I guess I'm the proud dad. So you tell me what you need and I'll help you go find it. I'm not going to do it for you, but I'll help you go find it. And I'll support you when you're wrong, and I'll support you when you're right. And, been on a lot of stages, like we talked about receiving awards. I don't care to be on those stages anymore. I want my team to be on those stages at this point.
So kind of moving aside and letting them step into the management role, the planning role, and just being more of a mentor for them.
100%.
Yeah. So what are some of the non-negotiables that you never want to see change?
I've built this as no matter what, we're the most professional home improvement company somebody's going to run across. And I don't see that negotiation changing at all, because if anything in the world today, you're seeing less customer service, and customer service is free. So I don't understand how it gets less. other than, you know, people don't train it or people don't care about it. So I don't see that changing. If it changes, it'll be only because we continue pushing it up even higher. I know my team is putting more processes in, more guidance around how we treat a homeowner, to make sure that satisfaction really is out there. And, you know, our Google reviews reflect it. We have some of the highest grossing, highest receiving Google reviews, every year over year, which is crazy to think about, you know, and obviously the charity, the community. I don't see that going away one bit. Again, I know what their goals are that they put on the table, and every one of them is actually accelerating all those beliefs that I had. So I don't see those going away. I don't see the core values or any of those kind of things changing. I just don't think they are non-negotiable. It's just, if you work for me, that's the way it is.
Yeah, I love that. It really defines the foundation of your business, and that is not changing.
Yeah.
So looking back at this amazing journey, I mean, I've had the pleasure of having, you know, just like front row seats to this journey and seeing all the ups, the downs, the changes, the dedication. You have done pretty much everything that we said, hey, do this. You know, this is what we advise. You and your team have executed on it. So I'm always like, yeah, David's our poster child of success. He's the only one that's ever done everything I've told him to go do and execute, which is phenomenal to see that, you know, it works to this level. Is there anything looking back that you would do differently, and why would you do it differently?
Do it sooner. Trust it faster. Get my team involved earlier. For a while, I sheltered it away from everybody. I didn't want to scare people off with more changes or, you know, more crazy. Or you're always like, oh, I'm going to learn this new thing, but what if it doesn't work? Well, I'm embarrassed if it doesn't work, so I'll just hold it over here until I'm sure it does. It probably would have gone faster, better, more embraced if they were with me from the beginning in it. Because it's funny, my team was asking for things. I just wasn't hearing them. And so as we started rolling things out, you know, they were looking at me beating their head against the table of, God, we've been asking for this kind of stuff for a while now, you know, to the point now, you know, we're doing, the M&M game. We're doing, you know, that cash flow kind of analysis down many layers, and we're getting amazing feedback from people that, you know, maybe we didn't have the right thought in our mind of they can't handle it or they won't understand it. And reality is they understand it very well once we communicated it to them at their language. So I guess, you know, get out of my own way, get out of my own headspace, and just like embrace it and go. There's some rough days. You've had to have conversations with me a couple of times, but the journey's worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's just, you know, part of it, right? Is there's that challenge that as entrepreneurs, it's hard to get out of our own way. It's hard to get out of the weeds. But I mean, that's part of the hard work, right? Mm-hmm. Is it's like, that is the hard work. Sometimes we're like, well, what is the hard work? Like, what does that mean? It's not going out in the field and working harder. It's making the internal changes and mindset shifts and leadership shifts that's needed to allow the team to expand and grow and step into their greatness.
Yeah. It was always the, well, what ifs? So I just won't make a decision because it could be bad or it could be the wrong one. So that paralysis.
Yeah. And it's common. So I'm sure our listeners, like, they probably are listening to this and thinking, yep, I've been there. I feel that, you know, and it's ties back to, you're not alone.
No, you're, and regardless of what you do, you're not alone. I mean, it's so eye opening, there's so many people in the same seat. So
before we wrap up, is there any final thoughts or advice that you would like to leave with our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, ask for help. Don't think you have to go alone. There's so many people that are willing to help you. There's so many opportunities to be okay. You don't need to be embarrassed. I remember the first time you looked at my QuickBooks, and I had to admit that I don't really know how to log into QuickBooks. So that education piece, you know, people will help you. You just got to be open to raising your hand and saying, I need help.
Yeah. And knowing it's okay not to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, we all get there. There's things that even at the beginning of my journey, I didn't know. I've been through the school of hard knocks, you know, mm-hmm. just like you all have. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it's part of the journey. It's part of, you know, kind of the reward of, hey, I'm here and this is where things are now.
Yeah. And the only thing I've ever asked of anybody that I've helped is just be there to help somebody if they raise their hand. I mean, that's just the pay it forward mentality of just keep going, because there are so many people that are afraid to ask and they're embarrassed to ask. And then, you know, whether it's in business or personal life, you know, bad things happen because they don't ask. So, you know, don't be afraid. Just raise your hand.
Yeah. Well, David, I thank you so much for taking this time to talk with us today and go over your journey. It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure all these years working with you and just going through this journey and seeing the success that you and all your team has had and how much they have grown. So thank you for taking the time today. I appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
So thank you for joining today's podcast. I hope that this conversation was enlightening, and we will see you on our next call.
Thanks for listening to the Green Profit Academy Pros Podcast,
the show that digs into the challenges of growing a lawn care and landscape business while maximizing your profit.